What does responsibility mean? Now, I hope those who are new realize that this is merely a talkback session. I'm not the... Hey, that's it. Correct. That's what I'm telling them. Everybody can make some noise. Not just you, not just me. So, if you feel like participating in what we are talking, please come in. What does responsibility mean? I shall explain my problem. English is not my mother tongue. I learnt it. And so whenever there is a new word, I begin to wonder, what does this mean? What is response? What does response mean? I ask you a question, you give me a response. And this word responsibility has two sections. One is response, the other is ability. So the response is merely the ability to respond. That puts this thing called responsibility in a completely different light, yes? If you understand what it means, that I am not going to impose upon my child, yes, she is still my child. I am not saying she is not my child. I am not going to impose my views and my theories and my dogmas and my what have you on her. But I have this ability to respond. If she has a need, she can come to me and I can respond to it. I have the ability to do so. Is this what we mean by responsibility towards our children? Or do we use it as some kind of a strangulation technique? It is my responsibility, you are my responsibility, and thou shalt. That's not responsible. The ability to respond. The child doesn't want the mouth to be wiped. This is a lovely chocolate and I can go on licking it for some time. And this, my mummy is wiping it all out, throwing it all away. Dreadful shame, isn't it? So, responsibility is the ability to respond. And also, if you have a sense of responsibility, you are full of eagerness to rush to the other person's aid, help. And the help is not to jump on the other person's shoulder and ride. There is a big difference between helping and riding. But if possible, allow that person to ride on your shoulders. Right? Is that possible? It's a completely different story. The true sense of responsibility is I'm able, willing, eager to respond to your needs, to respond to your call. Not to wake you up. No. Nature does it. Life does it. That is the reason why even in spiritual matters and so on, the highest sage was the one who behaved like deaf and dumb and mute. Deaf and dumb and blind. He pretended to be totally insane. If someone recognized his ability to respond and went to ask him something, he gave the appropriate answer. And this is very different from imposing your dogma upon somebody else. If this attitude is adopted, then there is tremendous harmony between us. The harmony is never broken, whether you are mother and daughter, or father and son, or any relationship, husband and wife. If you are my responsibility, it only means I am ready to respond when you have a need. And in the same way, you are ready to respond when I have a need. So that we don't impose ourselves upon each other, we don't expect anything from each other. And see, I express my need. If you are able to, respond, if you have the responsibility, ability to respond, you respond. Otherwise, you say, Swami, I'm sorry, I can't do that. That does not mean you are irresponsible, but you do not have the ability to respond. That is no crime. Right? Very simple. And therefore, there is no expectation. If I want something, the whole book to be typed before tomorrow morning, I give it to Susan and she does it in a jiffy. But if I give it to somebody who doesn't know what a typewriter looks like, but who may be a first-class carpenter or motor car mechanic, he would say, sorry, I can't do it. That doesn't mean that he is irresponsible. It means merely that he doesn't have the ability to respond to my request. Or unless you accept his saying, sorry, Swami, I can't do it, as the response, and therefore he has responded, and therefore he has an ability to respond. His responsibility in that situation is to say, sorry, I can't do it. And that's not a sin, that's no crime. Why should I get upset about it? But if I use the word responsibility in the other popular sense, then immediately there is a conflict. This is your responsibility, and this is my responsibility. But in both ways, you are the victim. Correct? I don't know if you understand this joke. I may say it's your responsibility to help me, or it is my responsibility to control you. It's both ways. Heads I win, tails you lose. In that situation, there must be conflict, unending conflict.
Where does it gain its popularity to be used that way?
Obvious, madam. As in the case of everything else, we have somehow succumbed to the idea of domination. I read a very beautiful encyclical by the Pope on human work. I don't know if Father Donovan has a copy, it's good to borrow and read. I've reproduced parts of it in the Light Bulletin. There, he makes mention of the biblical statement or revelation or whatever you should call it, that man has been given domination. Listen very carefully, otherwise you will miss me. Man has been given domination over all things on earth. Means you. Why not me? I'm also standing on this earth. Yes? So I must have domination on this too. If before I attempt to dominate you, I learn to dominate myself, control myself, self-control, discipline, then there is no problem. You would never object to my practicing my own discipline. It's only when I wish to dominate you, we run into difficulties. And at some point, it seems that when when I use the word man, it doesn't mean I'm a sexist. And I always remember a very beautiful, expressive expression used by my schoolmaster. Yes, man embraces woman. So, So at some stage, man must have discovered that it is very difficult to subdue oneself, dominate oneself. So as an alternative, why not dominate somebody else? Huh? It's very difficult to dominate oneself, but to dominate someone else. That is where this the values got perverted. Ideas got perverted, ideals had got perverted, values got perverted. And so we have been trying to dominate others ever since. And the natural tragedy is that you belong to my others, and I belong to your others. So who is to dominate whom now? We are both trying to dominate each other. You go to India, this is a notorious pastime of most of the people. Probably it's so in Christianity and other religions also. All Swamis keep talking about the duties of the householders. That's the favorite thing. You must do this, you must do that. And the householders in their private conferences and conventions, they declare what the Swamis should be like and what the Swamis should do and what the holy man's duties are. So goes the conflict. If I realized that yes, God has given me dominion over all that is on earth, and I instantly realized that I am not quite sure whether Dr. Bruce Essex is sitting on the ground on the ground, or is learned to levitate. And maybe there is just half an inch of space between his legs and the floor. Maybe, I don't know. But I am definite that I am sitting on the ground. So the only person whom I can really dominate, control, is myself. So why not start there? Nobody is going to object to this. Would you? Nobody would object to that. And if my practicing self-restraint or self-control or self-discipline or whatever terms you wish to call it inspires somebody else to practice such self-control, self-discipline, then it spreads. It can spread. They call it Shaktipat. But a very simple illustration was used by a great mystic of India known as Kabir. He said, why do you want to impose your views on others? Just be what philosophy you represent, you believe in, you have faith in. Just be that. Let it take hold of you completely, or you take hold of it completely, totally. You are totally saturated with it. Then it is inevitable that some others also must catch the contagion. It's a pure contagion. If your friend has TB, I don't have to go and borrow something from him. All that I need to do is to sit there and wait for him to cough up. And this holy man asked a very simple question. If a simple microbe or virus, or I don't know what, a TB germ, or has such potency, why do you think that the spirit doesn't have an equally powerful potency? So be self-disciplined yourself and it's enough. You may be able to infect others at the proper time, at the appropriate time. So dominating over all that is on the earth means dominating yourself first. And when you try for dominion over what you call your own body, my body and my mind, then you will know what it is to discipline my children and my... When you think of a grandmother going out at night, shouting to his granddaughter, leave the front door open, I may come late at night. How do you expect the granddaughter to stay at home? Right? It's very difficult to govern others, control, dominate others. But that's exactly what we want to do all the time. If you try to discipline yourself, you will at least be able to understand the difficulties of others. Yes? Then unless you are a licensed preacher whose bread and butter are scripture and lecture, you don't go about teaching or teasing others. It is then that you develop a responsibility, the ability to respond, keep quiet. And when somebody experiences a difficulty of indiscipline and comes to you with a problem, then quietly, gently instill a little bit of responsibility, a little bit of discipline. It may work, it may not work, it may work. Everybody knows, and it's even printed on, I don't know if it is done in Australia, in some countries, on every cigarette packet is written, smoking is a health hazard. Yeah, here also? who reads that? But, blood, you will stop it. Immediately you will stop, right? You cough up blood and then you go to the doctor, says, well, do you smoke? Yes. That is the time. If you have the ability to respond, respond, saying them, can you cut down? No, he says, I can even give up. You tell the patient, can you cut down on smoking? And the patient says, no, I can even give up if you like. That's it. That is the responsibility. From there, you spin a theory that if only you, the father or the mother or the doctor or whoever it is, guru, could have disciplined him before. Yes? Is that your idea of responsibility, isn't it? The popular idea of responsibility. If you had disciplined him before, he would not have got into this problem. You would never have been able to discipline him. Even if you don't smoke, let's say you don't smoke, but your daughter or your son wants to smoke because of association, because of friendship, and because of company and all that sort of thing. And of course he sees that his mother doesn't smoke. But you have some other weakness which he doesn't have. He says, so what? She is drinking or she is doing something else. And since I don't do all those things, I am allowed to smoke. Even then he won't listen. You tell him that, look, I don't smoke and why don't you follow my example? He'll say, no, but you have got those other vices which I don't have. So a compensatory vice. It seems there is a Swami in the ashram in the early days when milk was very scarce. And he used to ask for a glass of milk. And they said, we can't give you a glass of milk every day, like in alternate days or half a glass of milk. And he pointed to somebody else and he said, that fellow does not take milk, that Swami does not take milk, but he takes 6 cups of tea. And the amount of milk that goes into 6 cups of tea is 1 glass of milk. So that's what I want. They won't listen to you. Because all of us have got some defect or shortcoming or the other. Nobody is perfect. And so if I have one weakness, she has another weakness. And if I know how to dominate, have dominion over my body and mind, and try to remove that weakness, I realize how difficult it must be for her to remove her weakness. So, in this practice of self-discipline, two things immediately emerge. One, the eagerness to discipline oneself more and more, and sympathy for others, never mind what defects they have. And it's possible, again, though this is not the intention of the teacher, it is possible that if he has really learned to discipline himself, his words may have some influence, some power. His presence itself is sufficient to influence others. And a word now and then may be able to work wonders. A funny story is told. A young boy was addicted to chocolate. And the dentist had told the father or the mother that if this boy goes on like this, he will have no teeth left by the age of 12. They're already getting one caries. Oh, what to do? She took this boy to a holy man, Swami, in the village, and fell at his feet. And Swami, this boy is addicted to chocolate and is running into difficulties and danger. Please ask him not to eat chocolate. And the Swami looked very serious. And said, "All right, come back 2 weeks later on Sunday afternoon." This mother thought that maybe the Swami has to prepare something and then perform a ceremony. Exorcism. chocolate exorcism. So, she took the boy away, came back after 2 weeks, and presented herself and the boy to the holy man, and he looked straight into his eyes and said, "Don't eat chocolates hereafter." And he said, "All right, Swami, I won't eat." It's finished. Then the mother was intrigued. There's no ceremony, no ritual, nothing, no exorcism, nothing at all. Why didn't this fellow do it that day, 15 days ago? And so asked him, "May I ask a question? Why didn't you do it that day? Why did you ask me to come back?" It's quite simple. "I myself was addicted to chocolate then." So first I wanted to prove it on myself that it is possible. It's possible to give up eating chocolates. For the last 15 days I haven't touched chocolate. So it's possible. Tell him, stop it. He stopped. The words have power. That is what is called responsibility. The ability to respond. That's an ideal story for to illustrate the meaning of the word responsibility. The ability to respond does not come from a theoretical background, but from a practical background. All the other responsibilities are, sure, part of the life situations that we collect and dump under the word responsibility are not responsibilities really. They are neither duties nor responsibilities. If you are a mother and you have a little baby, there's no, you have no responsibility towards that baby. That's a silly word. And duty, duty. You know how bad this word duty is. You bring in something, and they, you pay duty at the airport, and if you don't pay, and you get into trouble, serious trouble. That's it. So that's the only place where duty is appropriate. We have a friend in Madras, a very good friend. And when we go there, sometimes when we need to go around, see places, he gives us a ride in his car. And when we ask him, "Mr. So-and-so, would you like to take us to the next village?" "Yes, yes, Swamiji, duty bound, I must take you." Because we both belong to the same master. We are both disciples of the same master, Swami Shivananda. Duty bound, it's pricking. It's not pleasant at all to sit in that car. Because you are not taking me because you love me. We are friends. But duty bound, all right. Come on, get in line. Does a mother feel that it is her duty to nurse the baby? No. And if the mother feels that it is her duty to nurse the baby or responsibility to nurse the baby, better leave that baby alone. That baby may be able to look after himself better. That is because there is love. That's a different, quite a different type of relationship. The same thing in the case of doctors and nurses, teachers. Unfortunately, that culture is disappearing all over the world. When I was a student at school, no teacher felt that it was his responsibility or duty to teach. No. There was that intense love. We were all his children. And in this may be of interest to you, my favorite teacher had a son who was my classmate. And this teacher loved me, for instance, more than his own son. Loved was the word. There was no sense of responsibility or duty. As a, if he wanted to be responsible to his job or to us, he would only be interested in statistics. Yes? So many of my students got through. 4 of my students got first class. But that means nothing. It's only numbers. You are comparing your number with another person's number. That teacher had only 50% success. And nobody had a 7 first class. My students, it's a lump. It's not a human relationship at all. That is where the teacher does his duty, painfully. Here he loved us. Our teachers loved us. And we loved them. There is no sense of responsibility at all there. And that worked a million times better. If a student was weak, the teacher would tell him, "Why don't you come home? I'll give you a couple of private lessons. You missed a few classes. Even if you are in the class, you are not attentive. So come home, I'll teach you. But now you pay through the nose and through your ears and through your whatever have you for private lessons." Because the teacher does not feel that it is his duty. His duty is to teach you at school. And he has discharged his duty. Discharging his duty is... if you have a suppurating wound, you press it, you discharge the pus, discharging one's duty. Terrible, terrible expressions. Nobody wants to do it. If you return to our childhood, the conditions were different, the social structure was different, the economic structure was different, especially. And we were not perfect. Let's be honest about it. We were not perfect. We had our own weaknesses. But for instance, the number of the illiterates, the percentage of illiterates was large in all countries, all over the world. You're following me? So it was the proportion between teachers and taught was small. So there was greater interchange of ideas. So that every teacher knew the names of all the boys and girls in the class. I doubt very much whether that goes on now. Mass production. And on the other hand, there were lots and lots of people who were unemployed. They were eager to do something, and therefore there was voluntary serving. Now the whole thing has become money-making game. Money, 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 money all the time. And therefore one has to use the word duty. Yes? Same thing, customs duty at the airport. If you understand the word duty, rigorously restricted to customs at the airport, you understand how that is applied to our lives. Your duty to serve me means that is how you pay me. That is the way in which you pay me. If I do something, it's your duty to pay me. Everything is valued in terms of that. The same thing could be done even more effectively if we dropped the concept of duty and responsibility and adopted the word love. My interpretation of the word responsibility is love. Correct? The way I look at it is love. Whatever you want to do, do it with love. That is your responsibility, the ability to respond eagerly to what, to any need that you feel in others. That unfortunately disappeared. I really don't know. It doesn't seem to have one single cause. Kali process, all sorts of things.
The breakdown in spiritual
values. But that doesn't mean all is lost or everything is bad. This has its own good features. We were not very gentle and very kind to the underprivileged in those days. There was a huge section of underprivileged people. And they could live happily only by lovingly serving their masters. That's also gone now. That concept is also gone. You have no idea I know only these two communities, Asians and Africans, how loyal they were to their own employers. It was considered a great duty or responsibility, but they did it with great love. Now that concept is gone. But the general level of living of the masses has improved. So that's a good thing.
Material,
whatever it is. Well, material, in other ways too. Material, educational and mental, intellectual. That scale has come up and therefore this has to go down. This is another peculiarity. That the world is in a state of balance. I don't believe that as some religious teachers tell us that either we are going eternally down or eternally up. It's always in a state of balance. Always. If you look too much after your body, your mind is getting dull. The brain and the bran. Most of these really muscular people may have nothing in there. They may be nice people, but nothing in their minds. And you cultivate your mind or your intellect to an enormous extent, it is quite possible that your body will suffer or you might get sick. There must be some kind of balancing mechanism. So that when there was large-scale illiteracy, poverty, there is a certain goodness. And when the illiteracy was removed and the poverty was removed, the goodness has gone down. They become more wealthy, they become more affluent. And the more affluent you are, the more you want. It's not your fault, but if we didn't have this carpet, it would be much easier to clean the floor with the little broom or a bucket of water. But now that you have this expensive carpet, you need a vacuum cleaner. So, when material values go up, spiritual values have to go down. There is no use saying it's a pity. What do you mean it's a pity? Why don't you appreciate that the material values have gone up?
Nothing.
Another tilt. I don't think you have. You may have forgotten. I have not. We used to play seesaw. It's a lovely game. Once you come up and once I come up and when you come up I go down, when I come up you go down. Why not? If you don't want to do that, what will you do? If you don't want to go up or down? Come, quick. That's it. The person who stays right there in the middle, he doesn't go up or down. But that, too many people can't stay there, huh? 6 or 10 people can sit here. 6 or 10 people can sit there. There in the middle, only one can sit. It's only very rarely people will want to get into the middle. Where you don't want too much of material comforts, nor too high a spiritual ideal, you know, stay there in the middle, you're all right. Pardon? No, naturally. It won't be, should be caught underneath. But that's very difficult. Life is not made that way. Life being dynamic, churning all the time. Hmm.